What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Young, Black, and Opinionated. I'm your host, Christina Royster. Make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening today. And you can follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at the YBO Podcast. On today's episode, I'm going to be telling y'all all about a musical documentary that I watched about the Queen of Disco. So let's get into it. All right, y'all. So as I mentioned on the previous episode, this month, June, is Black Music Month. And I am, you know, continuing to do a series on Hip Hop 50. That's not going to go anywhere. But I wanted to take a break from hip hop and talk about the Queen of Disco, Donna Summer. And I was obviously inspired by the May 2023 HBO documentary on Donna Summer. I believe the documentary is called Love to Love You. Yeah, that's right. After her song, Love to Love You, Baby. So we will get all into it because I was familiar with Donna Summer's name and her likeness, but all the songs that she wrote and all the hits that she had, I didn't even realize that they were her. And I think that was intentional. We'll get into it, how she like kind of fluctuated her voice and changed her voice. But this was a really awesome documentary because for me, I just like to know the person behind the music. I like to know how did they become famous. It seems like everybody back in the day was in some type of Supremes group or something and just shot to stardom. So I wanted to learn her backstory. And it was actually a kind of complicated one. She wasn't all picture perfect. So without further ado, I'm going to tell y'all about Donna Summer. So Donna Summer was born Donna Adrienne Gaines in 1948. She was from Boston, and as you can imagine, Boston in the 1950s was not a friendly place for people of color. She grew up in the projects, and actually they talked about how, I guess there was a white project, black projects, whatever. They were running away from some white people, and she was a kid, and she clipped her chin on, I don't know, a clothing line or a wire or something. That left her with a permanent scar on her chin for the rest of her life, which affected her self-esteem, she said. She thought that she would never be sexy, quote unquote, with this scar on her chin. Now, I don't know if you all have seen Donna Summer, but hopefully you are Googling her name as we speak. Donna Summer was a gorgeous woman. Honestly, she gives me SZA vibes if I had to compare to someone in today's time. However, there have been whispers that if they are to do a movie on Donna Summer, Kelly Rowland would actually play her, and that makes so much sense. She looks like her as well. And her daughter co-signed on that. Brooklyn Sedano, Donna Summer's daughter, does agree that Kelly Rowland can play her mom. So, let's go back to her childhood. Never thought she'd be sexy. Also, she had a very Christian upbringing. She grew up listening to Mahalia Jackson and singing in the church. She said her dad was definitely one of those strict dads, like red nail polishes for whores, that kind of thing. They couldn't really do nothing. And so she, you know, grew up in the church, sang in the church. I think she said a older woman in the church was like out that day and couldn't do her solo, and they asked her to do it. And from then on, she was like, yes, I'm definitely doing this for the rest of my life. She used to sing outside on the front stoop and garner the attention of neighbors. You know how that goes. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. When I hear these origin stories, I'm like, that's it? You just sang on the stoop, joined a band, and got famous? Like, but her journey wasn't quite that easy. So in high school, Donna Summer joined a white band, actually. It was all white people but her, called The Crow. She said that she was the crow. She was the one who stuck out of the group. But they wanted her to be like a black Janis Joplin. And she says she fucked with that because Janis Joplin, she says she never seen a woman on stage with a jug of whiskey in her hand singing the blues, you know? So that really inspired her. And she snuck out, sang in clubs. You know how that goes. Again, this is like, what, the 60s? So also, they talked about how she struggled with abuse. She said that being a woman is bad enough. Being a black woman is a double whammy. And how many times have I said that on the podcast? Like, we know that black women seem to be the lowest on the totem pole, at least in America. And she was also abused. She was molested by a minister in her teens. So imagine somebody who grew up in church, has such a passion for Christ, ended up getting molested by the pastor. Like, why is it always the preacher, the pastor, the priest? So that really messed with her for years to come. So in the summer of 1968, This is, you know, peace, love, and angel dust. Summer of 1968, she's just 19 years old. She went to New York City with her band to pursue a singing career. That did not go as planned. People always think they could just move to New York City and get famous. Not her, not the case. So she ended up going to Germany. And I often say this about Black music. Why is it that our music like pops off in Europe first, but not even in America? I don't know why that is, but that's what happened to Donna Summer. And it worked out just fine for her. She went to Germany. She found new freedom to be herself. She wasn't, you know, the church girl anymore. She found new freedom to really break out and be herself. And they said on the documentary, quote, Blacks were a hot commodity. There were very few Black women in Germany. So she started to rise to fame and get lots of press, especially as a model. And we'll find later, she was a jack of all trades, but she did some modeling. She was, you know, becoming a musician, and she took off like a rocket in Germany. So there she found love. Her first husband was a German man, and they had a baby, Mimi. But this is why I said she had a troubled past. Like, Donna just said, fuck them kids, and left. It's not funny, but they talked about how, in her own words, she was like, my dreams were bigger than being a mom. And she separated from this German man, ditched her baby in Massachusetts with her parents, and stayed the course and became the queen of disco. And so that was interesting to me because normally women are like, oh, can't wait to like be a mom or whatever. She flat out said, like, I had no maternal instincts and I knew that leaving my baby with my parents, she would have a good upbringing. So that was shocking because to me, it kind of seemed like you wanted to be famous. You ain't want to be a mom. And you should have thought about that before you had a baby with this German man. I'm just saying, like, that child was only 2 years old. And while her mom was touring the world, living the single life, the baby was being raised at her grandparents' house. I mean, it wasn't like Donna wasn't in her life at all, but she definitely was not as present as she could be. So she came back to New York. And she gained prominence during the disco era in the 1970s. She was signed to Casablanca Records. And this is why she's called the Queen of Disco, because nobody was doing it the way Donna was doing it. Like, Donna is the blueprint. That's why I wanted to have this episode, because there would not be a Lizzo, Beyonce, Black women in pop, Black women in music, period, without those trailblazers like Donna Summer. And, you know, we don't see a whole lot of Black women in pop music. We have our Taylor Swifts, our Katy Perrys, these names who have taken over the pop genre. But where are the Black women? And everybody's given Lizzo so much flack. It reminds me of Whitney Houston. When Whitney Houston came out, folks said she was too white. People didn't like Whitney. Well, at least in the Black community, some folks didn't like Whitney. So Donna, she really got her fandom in the dance scene, in the LGBTQ community. She was just played on rotation in, you know, Studio 54. Is it called Studio 54? Whatever that club is in New York City. She was like the soundtrack to this whole era, right? And she said that the music industry was opposite of the culture of her family. Of course, she grew up very close to her family, church family. So she says she didn't have many friends besides industry friends at that time. And that's no good. That's not good. She actually later had her family join her on the road because she said like she wanted that familiarity. But at that time, she really didn't have a whole lot of friends besides industry friends. So let's get into the music, shall we? Donna Summer, they said that her songs always had a story. They were always theatrical. If you see some of the videos in this documentary, she's just like talking like this and doing this and living her life like this. Like everything with Donna Summer was like a musical. And it kind of reminded me of myself. My boyfriend recently said like, you have a soundtrack for your life. And I'm like, yes, I just live in this Christina movie where everything's just a movie. And that was the same for Donna Summer, actually. They said that she really stepped outside of the box and paved the way for other Black people. But Interestingly, she said that this was not as herself. She said the persona Donna Summers was just that, a persona. She said that she was acting. She said that she approached singing as acting. And so when you think about that, it makes sense how she was able to just like break out of the box, be so carefree during this time where women weren't supposed to be that sexual. Women weren't supposed to be on stage grinding their hips. And so she said that she really approached it as a persona, Donna Summer. And she became super famous. Everybody wanted a piece of her, but she was a private person. And that's what I'm talking about with the whole kid situation, because it's like, people knew she had a kid, but she wasn't really about that life. So she was a very private person, especially with the whole molestation thing. She didn't really tell anybody about that, and that really stuck with her for years to come. But everybody knows that one song that really kicked things off for Donna, and it's Love to Love You, Baby. She said that song was not written to be a song. That song was just more of a vibe. They was just vibing in the studio. And on that song, she was, you know, crooning, moaning, like, ugh, yes, ugh. That was new. Nobody was doing that. Nowadays, we got wet-ass pussy. But back then, they did not have stuff like that. So Donna was really, like, groundbreaking. And she said this was a vibe that completely changed her life forever. After that, we had songs like, I feel love, I feel love, I feel love, I feel love. And guess what? They said that song was the first drum machine to be used in music ever. Every dance song after that tried to emulate I Feel Love. So that's the kind of legacy we're talking about with Donna Summer. And you know those famous people who like know they're going to be famous? She was one of them. She said like, yeah, I just always knew I was going to be a star. I don't know. I just always knew it. And indeed she was. She went on to make Hot Stuff. I need hot stuff. And that's the thing. That's what I was saying at the top of the episode. Like all these different songs, they kind of have a different vibe, different tone, different, you know, I said she approached it as acting, right? So that's why she said, when people listen to a Donna Summer song, I want them to be like, oh, this Donna Summer? Like, that's what I was realizing when I was watching this documentary. All these songs, I had no idea they were her. She works hard for the money. That was also Donna Summer. That origin story was funny. She said that she literally was walking somewhere, saw a lady like tired on a bench, and she was like, that lady works hard for her money. And then she said, she works hard for the money. She works hard for the money. And that's where the best songs come from, right? She was like, she just works hard for the money. And even that, this is what, the 80s at this point? This is when, you know, we're getting into the women's movement. And this is what I'm saying. Like, she didn't just speak for Black people. She spoke for LGBTQ people. She spoke for women. She wasn't even LGBTQ herself, but obviously all of her dance songs, you know, were the soundtrack to that era. And so they said that she just wanted to be on stage. For her, she didn't really like the screaming fans and stuff. They were weird for her. So she just was one of those people who just wanted to be in the limelight. All she wanted to do was sing and perform and be on stage. And I respect that because I love me a good stage. You know, I have a musical theater background and I just will work the hell out of a stage. And that's what Donna did. She said she had hella tours and press from 1976 to 1980. Like, imagine having hit after hit after hit after hit in a span of like 5 years and becoming a household name, becoming the queen of disco. But she said she actually wanted folks to know that she could sing more than like these disco, like pop songs. She did a ballad for her daughter, Mimi, that I talked about. She abandoned, which I'm like, eh. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, don't sing about it. Just be about it. But she was, the song was like, I know I'm never there for you. And you're always wondering why. Like, yeah, why don't you just fucking be there and stop singing about it? And I don't know. This is why I said, like, kind of troubled. Because, like, she would bring her out on stage and be like, say hi to everybody. Like, no, don't exploit your kid. Don't bring her on stage when you don't even want to raise her. But whatever. So the other thing was, not only did she have range, but she also wanted to be a movie director. And a lot of friends said that she always had a camera around and she always was asking people to act out stuff. So it really seemed like she was a jack of all trades, like actor, singer, director. But still, it's really sad when folks have seemingly everything in the world, but they're still depressed. She said, quote, her most dismal days were at the height of her career. She even tried to kill herself, but was saved by the bell, literally, because her cleaning lady came in. So that's crazy that everybody's like goo goo gaga over Donna Summer, queen of disco, but she's so depressed that she's willing to take her own life. So luckily she didn't. Luckily she was, you know, found before she could do that. And she ended up marrying a new guy, a musician named Bruce Sedano. That's her next husband, another white man. She loves the white men. I don't know. Okay, that's your steez. But she married this white man and had two more kids. And so the thing about that was, I get it. Like, when she had her first kid, she abandoned her, barely raised her. But then she had these next two kids and she was much more present in their life, settled down, had like an 80-acre ranch. So the one daughter felt some resentment about that, which I could totally understand. And also the other thing that they mentioned was that her daughter ended up being sexually abused by the housekeeper's family member or something. So that tore Donna apart because, you know, here she was, didn't really tell people about her own abuse. So then first it happened to her daughter. That just ate her up. She felt very, very guilty about that. So they had their own family issues to work out. See, this the tea, y'all. This the family drama that be going on behind the scenes. Everybody see Queen of Disco Donna Summer, but she has some issues with her family. She did have three beautiful daughters, though, and she was in their life till the very end. But the other thing I wanted to say was that, don't get it twisted, she was getting fucked over by the music industry just like everybody else. She said, quote, the music industry was like getting raped. She ended up having a lawsuit against Casablanca Records because they were taking advantage of her. And she did win that settlement. They ended up settling. And she then was one of the first people signed to Giffen Records. So yada yada, signed to Giffen Records. That's where she had her two babies. Also, fun fact, she was one of the first black female musicians to have a music video on MTV. And it was, you guessed it, Hard for the Money. So that's just amazing that she was just like breaking all these barriers. First black woman on MTV. And so she said, you know, by the time she had these kids, she was not as much in the limelight. This was the quote from her daughter. She always had a musical in her head. Donna's own quote was that she liked to approach things like she had concepts. She didn't have like a song in mind or lyrics in mind. She had a concept and she could like picture it from beginning to end. And I really just think that goes to show her artistry. Like, she was more than just a musician, you know, like that's what I'm saying. They not doing it the way Donna was doing it back then. Like, so blah, blah, blah. Mimi moved in, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Okay, this part was so cool to me. Donna Summer was also a painter. As if you didn't get enough talent, as if you wasn't already a dancer, singer, actress, you're also a painter? And it wasn't really until she had these kids, they said her kids inspired her. She said, when I paint, I have a tangible object that's made by my solo effort. Not the music industry, not the record label, not anybody else, you know, dictating what she can and cannot do. She loved to paint, and their family showed a whole room full of her paintings. So that's amazing. But they said, you know, later in her life, she did kind of struggle with the whole God versus man versus sex thing because she was abused. She struggled with that for a very long time. But they said finally, like, in the 80s, she had this whole, like, come to Jesus moment. She, quote, gave her life to Christ, which, I don't know, I figured if you're already Christian, like, did you already do that? But this is when she started to ruffle some feathers. So she became very spiritual, very religious. It brought her a lot of peace, which it does for many, myself included. And she gave her life to Christ. Now, some people didn't want a sermon in her new music. Just because you found Christ don't mean your music got to be Christian. But, you know, she would do performances and say certain things. And it was this one comment that got her canceled, y'all. She made an Adam and Steve comment. You should have kept that to yourself, Donna. In the 80s, at the height of the AIDS epidemic, you should have kept your mouth shut. So she made a comment about, you know, God didn't make Adam and Steve. He made Adam and Eve, whatever. I told y'all her main fandom was the LGBT community. So they canceled her ass. And I didn't even know that people could get canceled in the 80s. Like, they just popped up on her. They said, New York, act up. Y'all know those protesters during the AIDS epidemic? Those people who would just pop up and protest? Yeah, they did that shit. They showed up to Donna's shows and they got her the fuck canceled. So it really was just taken out of context, though, if I can, you know, play devil's advocate. I don't think she really meant it like that. But I'm not her. I don't know what she meant by it. But she claimed that she did not mean it like that. People kind of turned her words around, and it went from, like, this Adam and Steve comment to AIDS was God's punishment for the gays. And she was like, that's not what I meant. That's not what I said. But they didn't care. Once it was out there, no apology could save her. They started canceling her shows. And they said that she really didn't get over that hurt because she actually loved the LGBTQ community. So that really upset her that she lost her fans. So after that, she kind of just bowed out gracefully, you know. I don't know when she stopped making music, but eventually she did get lung cancer. And they didn't really talk about any drug use or smoking or anything during the documentary, so I'm not sure if that was the case. But she did get lung cancer, and they just talked about how, like, ironic that is that she used her lungs to sing and became the queen of disco. But she was one of those people who, not denial, but kind of non-acceptance, didn't really accept that she was sick and didn't talk about her death at all till, like, the very end, like, didn't let her family talk about it. And so she did die in 2012 from lung cancer. But at the very end, Donna's relationship with her family was great. You know, she was in her kids' lives, her grandkids' lives. And so, in short, that's Donna Summer's life. That is her life. And it was a messy one, a complicated one. She went from international stardom to, you know, domestic fame. And it clearly took a toll on her. And so just keep that in mind as we're talking about Black Music Month, right? Black music and Black artists are literally the blueprint for all other genres. But we see the kind of turmoil and trials and tribulations that they had to go through just to get some damn music out. Especially when you were trying to carve your own lane like Donna. And you're not singing up here like Mahalia Jackson. You're not up here like Diana Ross. You're up here shaking your hips and moaning. So it was incredible to watch her life story on HBO. So definitely check that out. The documentary is called Love to Love You on HBO Max. And that's a wrap on today's episode, y'all. Thanks again for listening. I hope that you are enjoying your summer. I hope that you are enjoying Black Music Month. And make sure you check out that documentary once again on HBO. You can follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at the YBO Podcast. And remember to subscribe wherever you're listening. Bye.